Oh, the sun's gonna shine in my life once more. Love's gonna live here again. Things are gonna be the way they were before. Love's gonna live here again.
Hey there, folks. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. As you know, I am affiliated with the King's College here in New York City. Heavily affiliated with the King's College. I love the King's College here in New York City. And the chancellor of the college, he used to be the president, now he's the chancellor, Greg Thornberry, said, do you know David Bahnsen, who's on our board, blah, blah, blah. He's got this book coming out, blah, blah, blah. And I didn't. And he said, I think it'd be a great guest for your show. And as usual, I said, Greg, what do you know? But Greg knows everything. And he was quite right. When I saw the book, I said, this is exactly the kind of thing that I would like to talk about if David Bahnsen is going to be in New York City. And it seems to me like he is in the city because he's sitting right here. David, is that you?
This is me.
You know what? I'm looking at the book here and I see people on the camera can see that doesn't he look? If you're watching on video, you can see that this is really David. Now, here's the problem. How do you pronounce your last name?
It's pronounced like Johnson with a B, but spelled very differently.
Bahnsen.
You got it.
I almost got it. Okay. The title of the book is Crisis of Responsibility, Our Cultural Addiction to Blame and How You Can Cure It. This is one of the issues of our time. So I'm really excited to talk about this book, Crisis of Responsibility, and to have you here in the studio. So where do we start? What is your background? What led you to write this book?
Well, the background of the book actually ties directly into kind of my story, what I do. So I run a wealth management firm, have an office here in New York City, and our main office in Newport Beach, California. I spent 10 years as a managing director at Morgan Stanley, and that's where I was during the financial crisis. As the crisis was kind of wrapping up, I began reading every single book that came out about the subject, and there was no shortage. I read about 75 books on it and reviewed over 50 of them and came to the conclusion at some point all the books started to run together. They were repeating themselves heavily. There wasn't a single book that was telling the story I wanted to tell.
Were they all blaming Barney Franks?
Well, there was sort of the right position, meaning the right wing position, that government was to blame. And there was that Fannie, Freddie, Barney Frank and government housing policy.
Right.
There was a subsect of the right that wanted to blame the Federal Reserve, easy money, that kind of deal. And then, of course, the left, and this is sort of the major societal narrative, was that the greed of Wall Street caused this whole crisis. Well, the problem is all three of these kind of theses had sort of prima facie support. They were impossible to totally reject, but not one of them was complete. But all of them had one thing in common, and that was that Main Street and their narratives was the victim. And in no sense was Main Street the culprit or a co-participant.
It's nice. It's always nice to play the greed card, right, to say that it's Wall Street screwing Main Street and everybody goes, yeah, yeah. It's those rich guys, and it's a little more complicated.
And in this particular case, it was almost sort of ironically more complicated because actually what Wall Street's accused of doing, which is reasonably accurate, is that they levered up a bunch of bets that Main Street would pay their house payments. So in a sense, Wall Street bet on Main Street and lost the bet, and now Main Street is vindicated and Wall Street is villainized.
Well, let me ask a question. Wouldn't some people argue that Wall Street cynically knew that Main Street couldn't pay their debts, but it didn't matter because the government would bail them out?
So it's an interesting theory, particularly interesting for Lehman Brothers stock that went to zero, Bear Stearns stock that virtually went to zero, Citigroup stock that today sits about 90%
okay,
lower.
In other words, it doesn't make sense.
Unless you think they're very dumb people, right?
Right.
Yeah. That was the issue.
But this is the first time I've heard this. This is exciting to me to learn something like this. In other words, that idea can't be true because why did Lehman disappear? Why did Bear Stearns? I mean, in other words, it can't be that simple.
Well, and also I think that a lot of it has to do with the failure of those that were behind TARP to kind of present it in a better way.
Remind us what TARP is.
The so-called Wall Street bailout, $700 billion of money that came in. A lot of it ended up being injected directly into the banks. They ended up paying it all back to the government at a huge profit. But it was certainly kind of an early cause to the Tea Party movement. It was wildly unpopular, both the right and the left, and the optics of it were just terrible. But essentially, it was a bailout of depositors. It was a bailout of bondholders. The whole financial system would have really suffered tremendously, exacerbating the problems on Main Street. But the equity holders of Wall Street and the people with skin in the game were decimated through the whole process. Now, are there individuals who ended up kind of walking away in the sunset and made for really good stories as to how unfair it all was? Definitely. But I think that morally, and this is the part I write about in chapter 4 of the book, it's actually one of my favorite elements. I think the psychology that was at play on Wall Street was identical to what was happening at Main Street. There were probably different work attire being worn, maybe more zeros involved, but it was essentially one giant game of keep up with the Joneses of covetousness. So you had Lehman wanting to be more like Blackstone, and you had Mr. Smith wanting a better house like Mr. Jones.
So covetousness is a nice way of putting it. It's called greed. But you're saying that it was across the board.
Yes.
And but this does get to the moral roots of America. American self-government, including capitalism, all of these things, they don't just work by themselves. If you don't have a moral population governing themselves within these wonderful gifts of a capitalist free market and self-governing democracy, then the whole thing doesn't work. So if you have greedy people on Wall Street or on Main Street looking to cut corners, looking to take advantage of loopholes, not caring who they screw in the process, then in a way it doesn't work.
That's right. And as your masterful book, if you can keep it, pointed out, the founders predicted all this, right? This wasn't anything new. What I find fascinating in the subject of the financial crisis is how quickly things decelerated morally. 1991, savings and loan crisis. You had about 20% of Americans were upside down in their homes. Your default rate was about 0.3%, statistically irrelevant. People were not walking away from their homes. You fast forward to 2008, just 17 years later, not exactly an extended period of time, and virtually 20% of Americans were willing to walk away from their homes. About half of them ended up getting workouts and things like that. But the point is, you just had this exponential acceleration of people. And this is the part that I find most disturbing from a moral assessment of the character behind it all. It was not just the financials and economics and other boring things involved. It was that you could go to the bar on Friday night and brag about it. It was so socially acceptable to walk away from your obligation. To say you bought four homes, now things were not working, you're just kind of defaulting and moving on. It would have been shameful behavior any other period in American history.
This is so huge. I wish we had more time. This is huge what you just said, because this is the heart of it. It's about the culture. It's the culture, stupid. It's not the economy. It's the culture. If you live in a culture where people can brag about screwing somebody else or about screwing the government or anything like that, it's over. The government will not function. You become a third world corrupt country. I talked about Greece. I mean, once you lose that kind of pride in who you are and in being a part of a larger community, and it's about, hey, I beat them, you know, and you can brag like that. I mean, that's horrific.
It really is. And we've had such an incredible DNA to fall back on. There is such an incredible economic, of course, you know, fruit that is born out of the nation. But through time, that's what has created these financial crises, is the character being eroded.
This is you already know, because you know my book, If You Can Keep It. This is so much up my alley that I'm liable to explode and disappear in a puff of smoke just listening to you, because really this is so important. But it thrills me that someone of your stature doing what you do gets this and is talking about it and is writing about it. Are you friends with David French? Of course, he's the National Review writer. He wrote the foreword for this. But this is a blockbuster, in the sense that this is the core of the problem. People write books about, you know, the financial disaster and all this kind of stuff, but this is it. You're talking about the thing that has caused the problem.
Well, that's what I believe, and I think it's manifesting now throughout the culture. The financial crisis was sort of the genesis of what caused me to want to write about it. But I think you can even expand where it is evidence. You look at our problems in the labor market. We have challenges that trade agreements have created. And one thing I tried very hard to do in the book is acknowledge that not all aspects of the new global economy have been beneficial to all people at all times.
Right.
But what I want to get into is where we've how we've responded to it and where there's a sort of moral shortcoming that I think we have to be able to get past to deal with the labor market challenges ahead.
A moral shortcoming. Yes. And what do you mean by that briefly?
I basically mean that we have a complete, total collapse of labor dynamism, an ability to reinvent the sort of character necessary to get past what has become a sort of economic transformation.
Okay, I want to come back to that in a couple of seconds, folks. Stick around. I'm talking to David Bahnsen, spelled B-A-H-N-S-E-N. The book is Crisis of Responsibility. Really important. We'll be right back. Hey there, folks. This is Eric Metaxas Show. A little Henry Mancini for you before we continue the conversation with David Bahnsen. David Bahnsen, you are the author of this new book. I am very, very, very excited about this book and about you. The book is Crisis of Responsibility, Our Cultural Addiction to Blame and How You Can Cure It. We were just talking a moment ago about labor problems. Start there again, because you said that part of our global agreements, free trade agreements, international agreements, there are problems there, but you said there's more.
Well, I mean, when I say there's problems there, I don't think it's necessary for a free trader like myself to deny that not at all times have all people benefited from all trade agreements. There has certainly been an impact that has had a sort of creative destructive effect. I wouldn't argue that therefore that means we have to blow up the trade agreements, and I would be wildly supportive of the fact that net-net these trade agreements have been positive for the American economy.
So you think basically Trump is wrong?
I do, but I don't know how much Trump really believes all of it, because I think he's still sorting through a lot of the issue. His impulse is very protectionist. It has been since the 80s. It was manifested then more anti-Japan than now, where it's more China and Mexico. But you can see his first year in office, it's been a lot more bark than bite. He hasn't gone and done anything crazy. He hasn't ripped up trade agreements. He didn't label China a currency manipulator. So it's difficult for me to really tell. I was worried about it during the campaign, but he hasn't followed through on some of those things. But what I would say is that it isn't necessary to claim that no one's been affected. I think there has been an effect, but it's never been the case that we would tell a town in Ohio affected with a change in steel imports, for example, that we are going to redo an entire agreement with a country to help benefit that particular town.
Because ironically, that sounds like social engineering, big government. It sounds like the kind of thing they do in socialist or communist countries, right?
And it's certainly, at best case, crony capitalism, that we would kind of go do some deals to help benefit certain companies and things like that. I think that you can acknowledge and be empathetic, as I am as a Christian man. I feel for people whose careers have sort of been displaced. I don't think trade agreements that are 30 or 40 years old are the primary cause. And that's the big issue that I want to address in the book, is saying, look, if we did force these companies to start doing this back in XYZ, Ohio, it would have 7 employees, okay? The technology has changed so much, the automation. So then you look at the opportunity that comes out of it, all of that creating new need for other lines of work. But we've had absolutely no reinvention. That's what I mean by no dynamism. So ultimately,
and why? Why no reinvention?
J.D. Vance's Hillbilly Elegy really affected me on this subject. Not only is it a masterful book and his own narrative and story so compelling, but it's very difficult to deny that the degradation of the family unit in middle-class America since the 1960s has had an unbelievable impact on a lot of the working-class city's ability to respond to dynamism. They're not able to move to where the opportunity is, re-education, reinvention. And again, you see this sort of character issue. We didn't have men systemically living at home till age 33, unmarried and unemployed in 1975. We had tremendous economic challenges in 1975. Bruce Springsteen made a career writing about it. Those were real challenges, but that was a generation ago. We're now kind of talking about a lot of the same issues, but the problem is we don't have a strong family unit, nuclear family to kind of appeal to. That character has been stripped away. So what I want to do in the book is suggest that the kind of policy prescription, we look, productivity has gone through the roof, even as the labor needed to feed the productivity has massively declined. It's because of technology. It's because of efficiencies.
Right.
America is not a country that would be against that. We're for that.
Right.
However, we have an entire group of people that have now blamed NAFTA, China, Mexico. That's not to say there hasn't been real issues and impacts. It's to say we have to be able to find a better way forward that is rooted in a sort of individual responsibility.
But so how does the breakdown of the nuclear family, you mentioned J.D. Vance's Hillbilly Elegy. How does that and, young men living in their parents' basements and not stepping up, getting married, getting a job, how does that affect what you've just described?
Ironically, conservatives have been willing to say this to the black community for 40 years. Daniel Patrick Moynihan very famously talked about what exactly was the a really significant issue in African-American homes and African-American communities 40 years ago.
That was 50 years
50
ago.
50 years ago. Well, I'm a little older, and I guess the whole conversation is. But basically, the exact same issues at play now. To me, I don't mean to be overly simplistic, although I do think this is kind of simple. Those with a wife and children are tremendously motivated to get up and go to work.
I can speak from personal experience. I'm not kidding. I would have not written the books that I wrote if not for my wife and daughter. I'm not going to go into the details, but I'm telling you that is a fact that I have acknowledged recently. It's dawned on me that something about having to support them, and if I was single, I cannot imagine that I would have been able to focus and force myself to do the hard work if I didn't have them, as outriggers on my tippy canoe, so to speak. It's more than that. But I think this is a big issue. And I see many young men who are kind of floundering. I was floundering as a young man. There is something fundamental to having a wife and kids that is healthy for men. So it's extraordinary that you, coming from where you're coming, are putting your finger on this. Folks, I'm talking to the author of an important book, Crisis of Responsibility, Our Cultural Addiction to Blame and How You Can Cure It. David Bahnsen, B-A-H-N-S-E-N, is the author. Forward by the great David French. We'll be right back.